Hannah Murray on TRE in the afternoon.
Joining us on the line now is Karen Walrun. She's a sought-after speaker and award-winning author. Her latest book, In Defence of Dabbling, is a delightful jaunt into how to be a total amateur by doing the things you love, even if you're not any good at them. Welcome to the show, Karen.
Oh, I'm thrilled to be here. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. It's great to have you. And what a lovely idea this is that, you know, we're always under such pressure to be perfect at everything. And you're saying we don't need to be.
Absolutely. You know, it's so funny. When I first started writing this book, I thought it's just going to be a book about, you know, a light book about hobbies. But what I really found is that by focusing on something that we just love to do without focusing on either profitability or perfection and having a regular cadence of doing it, it can be a really self-compassionate, self-transcendent way to live.
Yeah, absolutely. So you were dabbling in lots of different things while you were writing the book, weren't you?
I did, yes. I followed the book. I created the 7 attributes of intentional amateurism. So things like curiosity and mindfulness and play and playing with your comfort zone's edge. And for each of them, I tried something new. So for curiosity, I tried pottery. For my comfort zone, I took surfing lessons. And so it was really sort of an adventure in dabbling in quite a handful of things.
Oh, great. And did you find that any of the things you dabbled in you really enjoyed and will do them again?
Oh, for sure. But pottery has really consumed me now. So I now have a membership to a pottery and I go 3 or 4 times a week. Some of the other ones, not so much. Yeah.
That's amazing. And how did you get on with surfing?
I'm not as young as I used to be. And so the recovery was really tough. It took about 3 weeks before my back felt good again, but it was exhilarating. It was so much fun. And I actually think of all of the things I dabbled in, that one might have stuck if I lived closer to a beach. That was really a lot of fun.
Oh, amazing. And what about playing piano? You did that as well.
Yeah. So that was an exploration in self-compassion. I wanted to explore something that I used to be really good at but hadn't done in a while because I knew it might get a little frustrating not knowing exactly everything that I used to know. And so I went back to piano. I played for many, many years when I was a preteen and a teenager, and I haven't played in decades. And it was really interesting because one, I was sort of heartened by what I remembered. It was a little bit discouraging what I didn't remember. But what surprised me the most is I didn't come away from it feeling like it was going to be something that stuck. It was, you know, I was like, you know what? That was a great time for my life back then, but it's not something I really feel moved to continue right now. So that was sort of a revelation.
Yeah. So why did you stop playing the piano?
Oh, life. You know, I played when I was at home. My parents had a piano and then I went off to college and law school and I didn't have access to a piano. So, you know, life just sort of got in the way, as usually happens with a lot of the things that we've done in childhood. A lot of the things that we used to love to do, life gets in the way and you don't do them anymore. For that particular chapter, I interviewed a friend who is a roller skater, and she used to roller skate a lot as a child and returned to it after having a pretty intensive surgery and recovery. And she wanted to use roller skating as a way to kind of capture that feeling she had when she was a kid. And now she's an avid roller skater again. So it's really interesting how that can happen, right?
Yeah. So I know you, as well as her, you spoke to other people for the book. How did you find these people? How did you decide who you're going to speak to?
You know, it wasn't easy because the whole point of the book is to do things that maybe you're not that good at. And so finding out what people weren't good at was kind of tough because most people will put on the internet or anything things they are really good at, right?
Yeah.
So some of them were friends that I knew. Some of them found out that I was writing the book because I would write about little things that I was discovering along the way on my Substack or on social media. And they would share something that was really interesting. So there was a woman who makes automata, like little robots that she makes with little pieces of trash that she gets around the house. And she commented and I was like, oh no, this is way too interesting. So, and then sometimes things just sort of came up in conversation while I was talking about the book. People were like, you know, I do this. And I was like, yeah, that's very interesting. I want to find out more about that.
Yeah. Yeah. It is an interesting one because I think a lot of people, if they try something and they're not that good at it, they might think, well, I'm not going to bother doing that again. again, or yeah. they might keep doing it in order to become really good at it. You know what I mean?
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, and I want to talk about this. This isn't necessarily about not trying to evolve. Like, definitely, I think when you have a practice of returning to something, you're probably going to start getting better at it. That's certainly true with me for pottery, right? Like, I was horrible. Now I'm becoming pretty skilled at it. But the point is not for that to be the end goal. Like, the end goal isn't supposed to be, I've got to be perfect at this, or I've got to turn this into a side hustle. It's really just about, I want to be present with it on a cadence of self-compassion, right? On a cadence of play. And that's really where the secret sauce is, right? And amateur, the word amateur actually comes from the Latin meaning a lover of something. And I want to return to that meaning, right? I want to be an amateur because I love to do this pastime, because it's good for my mental health. It's good for my spiritual health, my emotional health. So that's really what we're trying to get to.
Yeah. And you see some in some kind of genres, things are celebrated or being an amateur. I'm thinking of amateur dramatics, for example. I'm a member of an amateur dramatic society.
And nice.
Again, yeah. And again, it's all people who love theatre, you know, love being on stage or want to be involved with productions in some way. And, you know, nobody's getting paid, so we're not earning money from it. It's just doing something that we enjoy. And obviously with things like this, some people are better than others, which is always going to be the case. But it's fun.
You know, I love that you do that. And I think that the idea of getting together with community in order to do something that's just fun, I feel like that's sort of slipping away. That things that used to be more common in the past, maybe with quilting bees or, you know, amateur choirs and stuff. And I really don't hear a lot of people doing that anymore. So kudos to you for finding an amateur dramatic group that you can connect with other people. Connection is one of those attributes of intentional amateurism, of being able to connect with other people and build community. So that, I mean, that's amazing that you're doing that. That's why I wish I'd found you when I was writing the book.
I'm also in a choir.
Oh, perfect. That's amazing. Wonderful, wonderful work.
Yeah, it is. And part of the enjoyment is obviously the main part is doing something that you enjoy. But it is also that sense of community, getting together with a group of people is great fun. Like-minded people who also enjoy singing or being on stage.
Absolutely. And we know there's research that says that having community and connecting with people is one of the ways that we can age better. We can live better. It's so critical to the way that we live our lives better. And so the fact that you found something that you love and you have that common interest really sort of, I'm sure, is the glue for your community and what makes it so enjoyable.
Yeah. So what were you surprised with some of the things you found out when you were researching the book? Did you sort of have any revelations?
Yeah, I did. You know, there were certain things like, first of all, I mean, the surfing was amazing because I really didn't think I was going to be able to get up to my feet on the surfboard. So that was really interesting. The other thing, and probably the biggest thing I realized is, again, I thought I was just going to be writing a book about hobbies. What I found out was that it's really something more profound. And for, you know, when we hear people tell us, oh, you if for your mental health or for your spiritual health, you should meditate or you should yoga. You should do yoga. And I think that can be true. But for some of us like me, yoga or meditation isn't something that's necessarily natural to us. It's kind of tough. But pottery, which makes me practice mindfulness and helps me to concentrate and helps me to shut out the world, can give me the same sort of benefits that maybe a spiritual practice has. And that was a surprise, right? That the thing that we keep returning to for the love of it can actually have the sort of spiritual and emotional benefits that maybe a more intentional meditation practice or a yoga practice might. So that was the biggest thing. I really didn't think I was going to be writing a particularly profound book, but it turned out that what I learned was really profound.
Yeah, that's really interesting. And I think really important for people that their lives aren't just about work. You know, we, depending on people's jobs, we can spend an awful lot of time at work. Hopefully, if we enjoy our jobs, then that makes the whole thing better. But when we're not working, we have a lot of choice generally as to how we can spend our spare time.
And absolutely,
you know, to find something that you enjoy doing that's stimulating, more stimulating than watching television, for example, is really important, I think. And it doesn't matter what that is. It doesn't matter how silly people might think it is. You know, if you've always wanted to try knitting, for example, try it. You know, what are you waiting for?
Absolutely. You know, and when I was pitching this book actually to my publisher, she told me that there was a young woman on the marketing team who said, you know, I'm so focused on my career because I want to make my people proud, my family proud, that I feel like I've forgotten how to be interesting. And so, you know, I thought that was such a heartbreaking thing to say. And now I tell people, I'm like, you know, I don't think your job makes you interesting. I think your hobbies do, right? Your job is great and it may be very cool. It can be a very cool job, but the thing that you do, that you would do regardless of being paid, because it really turns you on, it turns on something in your, sparks something in your being. That to me is a really interesting thing. And just think about how much we model for younger people, especially when we pursue a hobby, we pursue what we love, and shows that life can always be about learning and learning new things and tapping into curiosity. Like I really, really believe that it's something that can be very transformative.
Oh, I totally agree. And I just think how sad I'd feel and depressed, I guess, in a way, if I wasn't doing all these other things that I enjoy. If I imagine my life without any of those things, I'd be wanting to do those things. I mean, it's just weird to imagine. And I feel sad that there could be people out there that aren't finding things that they enjoy and trying new things.
And that's the other thing, I think, I think you've just touched on something that's really important, is that a lot of times I think we go through life thinking we're either going to have a joyful life or a sad life, but a lot of it is sort of based on sort of whatever the consequences, the things that happen moving through life. And what I think this book teaches, and I think what you've probably discovered through your own practice, is that we have so much control in the way we can inject joy into our lives, right? The way that we can make sure that we have a happy life. Yes, life is going to happen and things are going to happen that can be very hard or very challenging. But this hobbies are a one way that we can be like, you know what? I'm going to ensure that there is some joy and happiness and calm and curiosity and wonder and awe and connection in my life, no matter what. And that's one thing that we actually can control.
Yeah, definitely. It's a choice, isn't it? You're choosing to go for a walk. You're choosing to do some knitting or whatever it might be. It's you're picking something to do that you want to do, which is great. Really important to have as much of that as we can in life.
Absolutely. And just imagine, like, you know, with the crazy that's going on in the world with politicians or pandemics or whatever crazy things happening in the world, how lovely to have this one thing or two things or three things or a dozen things that you can actually control in your life, right? That it's something that you can be a part of making some beauty and joy and light in your life.
Yeah, definitely. So what have you made in your pottery classes?
Well, very, very mediocre pots. I recently made a Korean moon jar that I'm very, very excited about. It's a sort of traditional form in Korean pottery, and I was very excited about it. I have two mugs that actually look like something people might want to drink out of that are waiting to go into the kiln right now. But there's a lot of very, very mediocre stuff that I still delight in no matter what. Uh-huh. And actually, you know, as I say, this pottery, like, I've made a commitment to myself that even if I get really good at it, I refuse to take money for it, right? Like, I've gotten to the point now where some people will be like, oh, I'd love to buy one of your pieces. And I give them away, because the whole point for me is to stay an amateur and stay in the joy of creating and wonder and what I can create in my life. And I feel like really taking money for it would lose some of that for myself. So I will be an amateur at this no matter how good I get for the rest of my life.
Oh, that's lovely. Yeah, as soon as you charge for it, there's a pressure then, isn't there? You suddenly feel like it has to be perfect. But when you're not, it's just fun. You're just doing it for fun.
Absolutely. And also there's an element of pleasing other people if you take money for it, right? That there's a part of it that even if you're doing it for your own pleasure, it's also going to have to necessarily take into account other people's opinions about it. And the whole point is to separate yourself from that. It's about your own opinion about what you're doing.
Yeah, absolutely. And do you, when you go to a pottery class, when you've finished making something and it's time to make something new, have you got like ideas of things that you want to make, or does the teacher suggest things, or how does it work?
Well, I haven't taken a class in a while. So I just have a membership to a community pottery, right? So I go and that's where the kiln is and everything else. But I mean, my husband will tell you, I am consumed by this. So I have YouTube videos I watch and Instagram and Pinterest and all these things of different things that I want to try and do. So yes, there is a backlog of inspiration for me to figure out what I'm going to do next.
Oh, lovely. Your house will end up being like a museum exhibit or something.
Yeah, it's pretty crazy right now. I'm actually, my book tour for this book is starting tonight, and I'm actually going to be giving away a lot at this first book thing. So I could just give it away because my husband is like, we're out of control a little bit in our house.
We don't have more room for this.
Exactly.
Oh, that's brilliant. Oh, well, good luck with the book tour. I hope it goes really well.
Thank you so much. And one of the things I'm really excited about is I'm going to be in England for the very end of the book tour. So the book gets to go a little international for me this time. So I'm very excited about it.
Oh, fantastic. Very exciting. Well, if people want to get a copy of In Defense of Dabbling, it's available on our website, tre.radio. And it's by Karen Woolrond, who we've been chatting with today. Karen, thank you so much for joining us.
What a thrill and a joy to be here. Thank you so much for having me.